Calcio Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the Thursday episode of the Calcio Land Podcast. So we're switching things up a little bit. I'm actually leaving for England and Italy later today. So we're doing the pod a day early, but we do have a fun episode scheduled for you. We have a fantastic interview at the end of the podcast. We haven't focused on Fiorentina in a while, and I asked my dear friend Giancarlo Rinaldi to come on. That interview was recorded before that Juve game, which I'm kind of glad. I think that would have been a pretty painful one for Giancarlo, but a great chat on Fiorentina at the end. We do have game picks with Thousand Names, of course, with Serie A coming up this weekend, and I figured before my vacation, and because my co-host Alex Goldberg probably needs a little break from all the news in his neck of the woods, that we do something fun and we do goal over unders. We'll do it for the stretch run of the season, and I figured this was also a great opportunity for us to kind of take stock of the league and how the teams are doing and what we expect the rest of the way. So if you've listened to our pods for a while, we do these a couple of times a season. We'll look at the goal totals for the main strikers on the top teams, project how many they'll score the rest of the way. And that will also be a good discussion to figure out what will happen the rest of the season. So, Alex, I am going to take these in the order of the standings right now. So we have a new top dog in Serie A. Napoli and Milan are even on points, but Napoli do have the tiebreaker. So right now, Napoli, top team in Serie A, played 27 matches, have 11 to go. Our boy Osimhen, who we've been very high on this pod all season, 7 goals so far. So I'm going to set an over-under for goals in the next 11 games for Osimhen at 4.5. Do you think he gets to 12 goals this season, which doesn't feel like a huge goal total, but keep in mind he did miss a pretty significant amount of time. Do you think Osimhen's going to go over 4.5 goals the rest of the season, Alex?
I do, because I'm going to be stubborn on probably how I felt at the very beginning of the season. I know, obviously, he missed time, which he could not control, but I definitely had him with over 12 at the beginning of the season. I didn't have him at 20 goals in this season. I remember actually specifically saying, I don't know if he's there yet, but I think I had him in the high teens, and he can do 5. He can do 5 over 11 games for sure, in my opinion. Napoli just being obviously a good team right now in the league, good away win to Lazio the other day. I know he didn't score in it, but I also think it just helps when you're on a confident team, a team that's now trying to surge and get the title, especially since he knows he's going to get these opportunities. I could definitely see him scoring. I mean, maybe between now and this game, but I could definitely see him scoring against Atalanta and then Fiorentina and then at home to Tammy Abraham's Roma. Like, I can see him scoring in those games. A couple weeks later, home to Sassuolo, they just feel like games where Osimhen's going to bag a goal. So if he were to, and even 3 out of the 4 games I just said, all right, that's 3, and then he's probably going to score either a brace or a couple other goals in, you know, games I didn't mention. 11 games, it's not a boatload, but it's also not a small amount. Like, it's plenty. It's plenty to even find a rhythm. You could have 3 crap games and then have 4 really good games in a row, and if you're a striker on a good team, which he is, you could get a handful of goals there. So, David, I really like the player. I know you do as well. I think just collectively, he's probably one of our favorite players on Calcio Land. So, yeah, I don't know if it's stubbornness or intellect. It's probably a combination of both, but I am backing him to get over 4.5 in the remaining 11, which means he will have at least, I think what you said, 12 goals this season.
Yeah, I agree. So what would be the argument for him not getting there? He's not a huge volume goal scorer, which I think, you know, will he be a 25 goal scorer someday? Maybe, but he'll bring a lot to the table regardless of that. He doesn't take penalties at Napoli. Insigne, one of the best in the league at it. But despite that, I do think he gets to at least 12-5. That's like less than one every other game. I think, like you said, he might have some games where he scores multiple and gets there. I don't think it'll be a lot more. But look, I think Napoli also are on a good streak right now. That win against Lazio was really, really important. They needed that because Lazio had come back in the 88th minute. Then they score again. That's kind of what we were waiting for Napoli to show us, a character win against a good team in Serie A, and Lazio had been doing really well recently. So I'm pretty positive on Napoli and Osimhen as a whole. I do think they are a pretty legitimate title contender. I go back to the start of the season when Napoli were 12 to 1 to win the Scudetto. That felt like by far the best value, and they are in a position to make it happen, and I think Osimhen's going to be part of that. So I agree. I think he definitely gets over 12 goals. I'd be surprised if it was more than 14, though. That's for sure. Let's go next to Milan, who are tied with Napoli on points. So Giroud has 7 goals in Serie A. We've had him always around this 10-11 for the season total. Sounds like Ibra is going to come back at some point. Leao's been helping out with the scoring. Rebic is kind of a little bit on a slump. So do you think Giroud scores 3.5 goals and gets to over 3.5 goals and gets to 11 this season?
Yeah, I do. Because you know what? If Giroud's in this point where it only is going to take 4, and I'm not saying that's a small amount considering, like you said, Ibra could be coming back and everything, and Giroud's not in the Osimhen stage where you know that if he's fit, he's just going to play every game and, you know, maybe even play every 90, because we know Giroud is a player that really doesn't often play full 90s, and he's definitely at the other end of his career. But David, I've been so consistent on this podcast saying this is the season of Giroud. Like, this is the season of Giroud. So I think I would be an idiot. Now, no offense, you might still have a different answer, so I'm not calling you an idiot. But based on how I have viewed Giroud in an Arsenal shirt and then especially in a Chelsea shirt, I'd be an idiot to not back Giroud for at least 4 more goals in 11 games. It's Giroud season. It truly, truly is. This is a time where he really turns up. I think I've said it before. Could be a little bit boring of a statement, but he's this seasoned veteran who it doesn't really matter what team he's on. As long as he's in an environment where once he's on the pitch, you know how to play with him, he's just going to go about his business. He can score in a variety of different teams. Like I said, as long as you kind of know how to play with him, he takes care of himself. He knows how to endure a long season. This is his time. And if anything, Ibra coming back, I mean, Giroud's also a guy who likes to keep strikers out who might be the main striker when they come back. Like, he's not been a stranger to that. When maybe someone's getting fit again, who clearly is the starter when everything is even, when everyone's fit, Giroud has been pretty good at getting even more momentum to keep that guy temporarily out or just playing a little bit less. So yeah, it's Giroud season, David. So I'm saying over 3.5.
Yeah, it's close. I mean, we've had him in this range. I agree with what you're saying. The Ibra, you know, say Ibra was 100% and we had a pretty good idea, pretty good feel that he'd be able to play a good amount the rest of the season, maybe it'd feel differently. So yeah, I agree. I do think he gets to 11. I'm going to say this. If he gets to 13, I'm going to say it's almost a lock Milan win the Scudetto, because I think they have a lot of other good things going. If they can get that striker, if he can score 6 more goals in 11 matches, which for Giroud is a lot, I think that's a sign that Milan are going to win the Scudetto. So let's see what happens there. I'm with you there. I'm going to go over. So let's go to Inter. So I changed it up a little bit too, because both strikers are in a slump right now scoring. So Napoli and Milan had 11 games to go. Inter have 12. So keep that in mind. So I'm going to combine Dzeko and Lautaro. So Dzeko has 10 goals so far this season. Lautaro has 11. They've been in a big slump. So I'm going to do an over-under combined. So in the next 12 games, do you think combined Dzeko and Lautaro are going to go over 8.5 goals?
Oh, that's a really tough one. You know, I should be able to kind of apply the same logic I did with Giroud now on Dzeko in terms of a seasoned guy, especially a guy who's known this league for a while, who can probably not have these peaks and valleys. But like you said, we have kind of been in a valley with Dzeko, but not just him. Taro as well. Then again, I never really saw Dzeko getting that much more than 10 anyway, so we're already there. And Lautaro, I remember last time we did over-unders, probably more at the true halfway point, I kind of challenged Lautaro to get whatever number you had set for him, and I had taken the over whatever it was. Obviously, it was more than what he currently has at 11, but I was a little hesitant to even do that at the time because I just don't see Lautaro as a goal scorer yet, more than just a good player, like a good forward. So, oh man, I know it's collective. I know it's collective, but David, just because I don't feel like Dzeko is going to end the season with that much more than 10, like I'll cap him off at say 13. I don't see Dzeko getting really any more than 13. And then that would of course leave, well, 4.5 there for Lautaro to get. Well, no, he would need to get, I'm sorry, to go over 8.5 if Dzeko only got more. He'd still have to get 6 more. I don't think Lautaro's getting 6 more. So I'm going under, David.
Me too. Me too. I am concerned. You know, I've been feeling very good about picking Inter for the Scudetto and being pretty stubborn about it the whole season. I am concerned a little bit. Look, I have thought Dzeko first half of the season, if you told me Dzeko is one of the most impactful players in Serie A this season, I would have said absolutely. I wouldn't have argued too much if you told me first half of the season Dzeko was up there as MVP in the league, not just because of the goals, but there is reason for concern there. Lautaro's in a big slump. I know he's going to get out of it and he'll go on a streak where he scores a good amount. So if we did the over-under for Lautaro, like say even 5.5, I would think about it. I'm kind of with you. I don't think Dzeko has too many more goals in him. Despite this, I do think Inter can still win the Scudetto. But one thing that I hadn't thought about is, you know, last season they had Conte's athletic preparator, who's now at Real Madrid, Plintus, who's one of the best in the business. And this year Inter has Inzaghi's athletic preparator we had at Lazio. And there are some Lazio fans that do say with that guy, you usually get one great half of the season and after that they run out of gas. Maybe there's some truth to that. I never kind of thought of it in those terms. Like, look, Lazio has finished top four before and won some trophies. So maybe it's not exactly true that they kind of collapsed in the second half. But it's undeniable that Inter as a whole really, really looked gassed. I think more Dzeko is obviously a huge part of that. Barella is just almost unrecognizable now. So I think if you're an Inter fan, there is reason for concern. I still think of all the teams we've talked about, I think they're the one that can make the best case to win the Scudetto, but they're going to need some goals from other players. So they're going to need Çalhanoğlu to come through on set pieces. They're going to need some goals off corners. And they're going to need, you know, maybe Gosens to have an impact. He's back. I still think if you ask me now who's going to win the Scudetto, Inter's still my pick, but I do have concerns over the two strikers. So I agree. I'm going to go under the 8.5 for them. Okay, let's move on to Juve and Vlahovic. And man, that Fiorentina-Juve game was absolutely wild yesterday. Talk about teams living up to their stereotypes, like Fiorentina. I mean, the atmosphere was awesome. I thought the choreography, the Dante Alighieri stuff played perfectly. But man, when Juve scores on an own goal at like the 93rd minute, like the talk about the oxygen being taken out of that place. So I feel bad for Fiorentina. Vlahovic obviously went to console the player there. So Fiorentina, that was as epic collapse typical of Fiorentina. And talk about a Corto Muso win by Allegri, just doing the bare minimum and just taking, ripping someone's heart out of their chest. What a game. And that was fantastic. So that's the intro on Vlahovic. He has 20. Juve has 11 games to go. I'm going to set the over-under for Vlahovic. It's the highest for anyone on this pod that we're doing today, and I think for good reason. I'm going to set it at 6.5. You think Vlahovic gets to 27 goals or more?
Oh, man, if you'd done 5.5. It's crazy how, like, the quickness in my answer depends on one. But if you had done 5.5, I don't even give you an answer, and I say over. 6.5, it's such a great number. So it makes me think about it just a little bit more. Like, he obviously can do it. I mean, he's got the talent to do 11 goals in 11 games, David. And they have a lot of favorable home matchups, too, between now and the end of the season. And honestly, if it's on the line, let's say he needs one more goal last game of the season, of the Serie A season, they're away to Fiorentina. You think he's going to do it then? You know he's going to do it then. So, oh, man. Yeah, I think he gets there. You know, as you said, the Fiorentina game in Coppa Italia was crazy. And, of course, he didn't score in that one. But the previous Serie A game, he's got a nice brace away to Empoli. And I can definitely – I'm not, you know, picking on a lesser team. But, like, at home to – Salernitana and Bologna, like, and Venezia, like, I see him scoring in these games. I really, really do, especially because they have something to play for. You know, maybe if it was the old Juve where they have things locked up, like the title locked up, maybe it's different. And maybe, you know, if you're still in Champions League, Juve being, they get past Villarreal, maybe he's not even playing as much or starting as much in league, but they definitely have to make sure they get top four. I mean, they should, but it's certainly not wrapped up at all. Atalanta have a game in hand on Juve and are only 3 points behind. So I actually am going to say he gets it probably just by one. Like, I'm saying he ends with 27, but I know a lot of Serie A fans have been convinced on him for a while. Admittedly, I hadn't seen as much of him just because, you know, it's harder to watch a Fiorentina game, even though CBS Sports has got great coverage, I should say Paramount Plus. I am seeing him now more for Juve. Also, I'm a little biased. He won me a nice bet. I had bet the other week for him and who was it? It was in the Champions League. It was for him and a Chelsea player to score in the game. I parlayed it. I don't remember honestly who it was, but it doesn't matter. Vlahovic scored what in the first minute, and what a finish. Like, what an instinctive finisher against Villarreal. So yeah, I'm convinced on the player. I think if I'm that convinced on the player, I have to go over, but it's a good number, David, so I'm saying just over.
Yeah. So first of all, huge kudos to Guardaline and Napoli Outsider, who our patrons are very familiar. They were so early on the Vlahovic train. And I kept telling Napoli Outsider, I think was Siemens, the Serie A player who has the best chance down the road to win a Ballon d'Or. And he's like, maybe it's Vlahovic. And I think he's right. Really, really impressive. I think he's been awesome at Juve. It almost feels like Juve has what they had with Ronaldo, where if you have him in the lineup, you feel like you're starting the game 1-0 so often just because of having him. I've said he reminds me Tevez when he arrived at Juve, and the way the whole team feeds off his energy, Juve just looks different. And teams opposing defenses are just terrified of him. So it sets up the rest of his teammates to score. But even more, he reminds me of Ibrahimovic, but when he first arrived at Juve, the one that Maggi brought from Ajax, like tall, physically imposing, but still very technical. Not, you know, like a Petagna, Graziano, Pelé, just big body. I can really move and get things done. So I'm incredibly impressed with Vlahovic. You know, we talk about transfer fees only matter if the player flops or not. Juve paid a lot for a player with 1 year left on his contract. There's no one right now that would say, hey, that was a bad deal for Juve. It wasn't a bad deal for Fiorentina. It was a great deal for Juve. So that's a really nice way for me of saying, although it is a high number, I feel pretty confident he gets over that. As you mentioned, they do have a pretty easy schedule until the Inter match. So yeah, I think Vlahovic, and we'll get to Immobile, but I think he is the clear front runner to be the leading goal scorer in Serie A. So let's get to Atalanta. And again, I know there's a lot of talk on, is Juve a Scudetto contender or not? I think it's not out of the question. It's not a lock that they make Champions League because Atalanta are surging. So I picked two midfielders because Muriel's hurt. There's uncertainty on Zapata, but their midfielders have picked up the slack. So, Alex, your boy Pasalic, 9 goals so far this season. Recently, Copa Miners has been on absolute fuego. Someone pointed out to me that he did have a lot of goals last season before he arrived at Serie A, but I thought of him more as like a defensive mid who was going to be alternative to Freuler and Duran, but he's a baller. He's got a lot of technique, been really impressed with him. So he has 4 goals. So Pasalic and Koopmeiners combined this season have 13 goals. And these are not even set starters on Atalanta. That's the most incredible thing about this, because on paper, the starting midfielders on Atalanta are Deron, Freuler, and Piscina. And these are technically backups, and they have 13 goals combined. So I'm going to, you know, be aware that they're midfielders and not always going to be starters. So I'm going to do a combined 4.5 goals for them the rest of the season. You think they go over or under?
Oh, that's a good number. It is, because I feel like they're going to get 4 collectively. I do like the way momentum's going, though. As you said, Koopmeiners is on fire, and Pasalic just scored in the last game. And yeah, he's not even a nailed-on starter, and he's not really even a striker. But you know, the way Atalanta play, I feel like almost even the last game, from what I saw, he was sometimes playing in striker zones, just not as a classic striker. And we know that Atalanta, you know, can just be vicious in their attack collectively, but both those players, I imagine, are going to be involved in many of their great moves, even though they just have a plethora of really dangerous attackers. Jeremy Boga now being another. Oh, man. 12 games is not a small amount. You know, it's not a small amount. So let me talk this out. Koopmeiners got about 2 or 3 more, and Pasalic would only need 1 or 2 more. I do feel like Pasalic hits double digits, meaning he gets 1 more. Damn. You know, just to balance things out, I'm going to say under, but this is just like with Vlahovic where I said over, but just by 1. I'm saying under, but just by 1, which really just gives you credit at setting the number there. So I'm going to say they get 4, but they don't go over 4.5.
I'm going to agree. You know, Zapata, there's buzz that he might come back pretty soon. Like, look, if Atalanta has any chance at catching Juve, and look, they have a game in hand. So as you pointed out, they have 12 games to go. Juve have 11. I mean, Atalanta technically could be tied, and I think they have the tiebreaker over Juve. I could be wrong on that. I'm not going to totally dismiss Juve as a Scudetto contender because it's a really weird season, but I also wouldn't say they're a lock for top 4, and I think Atalanta can get there. They're going to need, though, Zapata, Muriel to make an impact. I think these midfielders are putting a really nice Band-Aid on the problem, but I'm with you. I think it's 4. Curious to see what happens with Atalanta. I think too many people are writing them off. So let's get to Roma. Of course, we're going to do Tammy. So Roma, 11 games to go. Tammy has 12 goals. I'm going to set the over-under for him the rest of the way, 4.5. Do you think he gets to – that would make it 17 in his debut season in Serie A if he goes over, which would be a really nice total for a first season in the league.
I almost have to go over, right? But I actually have a reason behind it. He takes pens now. He's been taking pens lately. And God, is that justice? You know, he's really never had the opportunity to do that since he was on Aston Villa way back when. He was not able to do it for Chelsea. I mean, David, it's easily forgotten even by Chelsea fans. But first season with Chelsea, Frank Lampard's first season, Tammy Abraham, of course, got 15 league goals, Premier League goals, with no pens. No pens attempted. Jorginho, of course, was the pen taker. So I think it really helps now that he could be up for taking the pen. I think he has 2 pens scored in the last few games, or at least league games. So with that, yeah, I think he can get 5 more goals. The only thing, to add a little bit balance, as to why he might not get there, is the one thing that Tammy is not battle tested on yet is really the end of season. So what I mean by that is
interesting.
His first season with Chelsea, I know a lot of like Tammy doubters will say, well, he scored 15 pretty much by the halfway point. And then what happened? You know, he did have an injury, but he also did fall off in play. So that's fair. And then the next season, when Frank obviously got sacked, you know, about halfway through, Tuchel came in and just didn't really fancy Tammy all that much. It wasn't even like hateful or spiteful. He just didn't play Tammy, really. So in two straight seasons for Chelsea, he really was not at all a focal part for the second half of the season. That first season under Frank, it was Giroud who took over. And some of that was because Giroud was on fire. So it's a little unfair on Tammy. But Giroud was on fire. And then next season, like I said, Tuchel comes in and he doesn't go that route. He goes with Kai and Timo up top. So that's the one cause for concern. Like, Tammy hasn't really been in this situation before. But I think things are set up a lot better for him here at Roma. They need him, and I think at this point he can handle the pressure too, 24 years old. So, yeah, I'm a big Tammy believer, and I think the fact that he's taking pens gets him to five, at least five in 11 games, David.
Yeah, I'm with you. I absolutely – the penalties is interesting, and I think Mourinho is going to be very busy talking a lot to try to get him a lot of penalties after games. Recently, it seems to start working. I kid, but there's a little bit of truth to that. Yeah, look, I think Tammy's been awesome. Huge fan. I think when we started the season, we had him around 14, 15 goals. It looks like he's comfortably going to get there. And, yeah, I actually think he's going to finish strong. I'm going to go that he gets the 17 goals for the season. Before we move on, if you could bring back right now either Tammy or Tomori, who would you personally bring back? And do you think most Chelsea fans would agree with whoever you're going to pick?
That's a great question, especially the second part of that.
There's Christensen, there's Lukaku gone out. So if you can bring one of these two back, who do you bring back and why? And do you think most Chelsea fans agree?
Okay, so I bring back Tammy. And I love Fekayo. I absolutely love him. I've had his father on twice. I think he is a tremendous young center back. And maybe even, David, a better center back still than Tammy as a striker. It's close. Like, it's close, especially if I'm going to say Tammy's going to get 17 league goals in his first Serie A season. Then obviously I rate Tammy. But I still think Fick might be even a step ahead. But we don't have much of a contingency plan behind Lukaku. Then again, this guy, Armando Broya for Southampton, Fabrizio loves him. He's always tweeting about him. We have a striker on loan at Southampton who's killing it. So now it's even a better question, David, because, you know, a couple months ago when Broya was still a little bit unproven in the Premier League, I would have said, well, after Lukaku, what do we have? What do we have? So bring Tammy back. And I've definitely said lately, what Lukaku has done this season, Tammy could have easily done. Like, Lukaku has just been so below par. Like, even last night he scores, but he ghosted the game and then got a tap in at the very end against the lower league opposition. Tammy can do that. Are you kidding? Tammy is like the king of the FA Cup, which is what that competition was. So, yeah, I think there's still more of a need for Tammy. I know Christensen's leaving. I know Rudiger could leave. Aspilicueta seems like he's out the door. That's a lot to lose, and it's a lot of pressure on, say, a Thiago Silva. And we already lost a Mark Gehi, a young center back, to Crystal Palace. But if there's another Mason Mount or Reece James for me, and this is not something that will really hit the Serie A listeners' interest, but I have another one. His name is Levi Colwill. He's having a Reece James-type loan, meaning, you know, when Reece went to Wigan, it was just almost a historic loan. He was just way too good for the league and for the team. Levi Colwill thought of in the same breath kind of as Reece on loan at Huddersfield in the Championship. And actually, David, it's a funny connection here. Chelsea were partly okay with letting Fekayo Tomori go to Milan because they had someone named Mark Gehi. Okay, well, Mark Gehi then saw Rudiger do amazing and Christensen do amazing in the Champions League under Tuchel, and Mark Gehi was at the end of his contract and said, wait a minute, though, I would just beast the championship. I want to play. So we had to sell him, and we had no other option. We got a good amount of money for a player that never played in the Premier League before. But we were also okay with selling Mark Gehi because we have Levi Colwill. So in a way, it's been a train from Tomori. We've been blessed. I mean, David, we have another guy Serie A listeners will know, Ethan Ampadu at Venezia. He's doing pretty well these days. You know, he's playing a little midfield. He's playing a little center back. He's playing a little right back. I'd be interested to hear if we have any Venezia listeners who've been impressed with him. But still, he's further down the depth chart. So it's a great question. Now, David, the second part of your question is, would most Chelsea fans agree with me? I'm not so sure.
Yeah,
there's still a lot of Chelsea fans who look at losing to Maury and they're still absolutely burned by it. And I don't blame them, but I would go Tammy. I think maybe more than 50% would disagree with me.
Yeah, look, it's probably the right, and you know would know way better than me. I think the world of Tomori. I think he's absolutely one of the elite center backs in Serie A. I just think a striker that can score you consistently goals, and I think Tammy's showing it, is still the hardest thing to find. So agreed there. Okay, one more. Let's close on Immobile and Lazio. So Immobile has 19 goals. Him and Vlahovic are going at it for the Capocannoniere. We've had plenty of seasons where Immobile gets to 25. So I'm going to set the over under 25.5. So do you think he gets to 25 again?
It is really difficult because, God, if there's one thing he is, it's very, very consistent. And it does feel like he's just a lock to get 20 goals this season. He's on a pretty damn good run right now, isn't he? He's scored a lot lately. So 11 games to get, well, six really, which would then put him at 25. Yeah, right on the dot, like you said. So I can say over and still have Vlahovic be the golden boot winner there. So, yeah, I will say over. And because I went slightly over on Vlahovic, yeah, Ciro doesn't get the crown there, but Ciro still gets a really respectable and impressive number with 25. And just the other thing is, you know, the same way I kind of cautioned on Tammy that he hasn't been in this situation before, even though I still went over, you know, that would be my hesitance. With Ciro, it's like he's been in this situation plenty of times before. Like, if there's anything Ciro Immobile knows how to do, it's score in Serie A. Put him in another league, you know, he could be a vastly different player. Him especially, you know, I've always referenced kind of the comfortability that's been said he has within this league. But, yeah, I'll back him to hit 25 on the dot.
Yeah, I'm on the fence. It's a good number to put him at. Look, I would feel like it's a lock if Lazio hadn't lost that Napoli game in such bad fashion. And they were actually on a good roll. They were actually looked like maybe an outside contender for making top four. That was a bad loss for them. So I'm going to go under, but he'll be pretty close there. Okay, Alex, before we move on to game picks, is there one over or under that you pick that you feel particularly passionate and certain about?
Yeah, man. So I had a bit of hesitance on the Osimhen one. I did. The Vlahovic one, I can't say that's a lock because I gave your number such credit, as I did with really all of them. It sounds weird because I'm just being biased towards Chelsea men, but I think the two that I answer the quickest were Giroud and Tammy. But I actually would say that the Tammy one, the caution I gave, is a legitimate thing. Like, I could also see a scenario where he only gets four more. So this is going to surprise you, actually. Out of all of the locks I have, I'm just riding out with it Giroud season, and I'm saying that I would be very surprised. I really, really would be if he didn't get four more. I agree that once you start getting to 13 or 14, that's just too high, but 11 at this point, yeah, I would be surprised if Giroud does not get four more, even with Zlatan coming back into the fray, which, like I said, could even fire Giroud up that much more.
Yeah, I've been thinking about it. I'm going to go for my lock, Osimhen. It's close, but I have a hard time. Look, of course, health, and that applies to pretty much everyone, but it feels like he paid his dues with injuries. So I'm going to go with him as a lock, but I'm going to repeat that if Giroud goes over 12 goals, I think it's almost a lock. Milan win the Scudetto. I set the over-under for Dzeko and Lautaro, 8.5. If they don't come close to that, it's going to be really, really hard for Inter to repeat. So this is a great exercise, as always. Well done, Alex. I'm glad we got you a little break from all the news you've been covering this week. So before we get to our patrons, of course, we have Thousand Names on deck with his game picks. We have Serie A coming this weekend. I'm going to be in London for the weekend. I'm going to try to hit up some of these games. So first up, Big match. Roma hosting Atalanta. Thousand has Atalanta winning 3-1. Goals by Oliveira, Malinowski, Demiral, Palomino. And he says Gasperini is going to get vengeance after getting robbed in the first time they faced each other and is going to embarrass Mourinho in his own stadium. He says Atalanta is going to be virtually tied for fourth place after this game and are going to send Allegri to hell. And he says Jose as a character is finished. I'll say he's still very entertaining. I'm not sure if I'd want him managing my team, but entertainment wise as a character, bring it on. We need more like him. And Alex, we need you to send more young Chelsea players to Serie A. In Italian, Roma Atalanta 1-3, Oliveira, Malinowski, Demiral, Palomino. Gasperini si vendica del furto dell'andata e umilia Mourinho a casa sua. La Dea torna brutalmente quarta e manda Allegri all'inferno. José, personaggio finito. Look, you guys know I'm pretty biased towards Atalanta. I do like them. Roma has been really pretty shaky. So I'm going to go Atalanta. I'll give Tammy a goal, and then Malinowski and Pasalic a goal for over-under. So I'm going to have Atalanta winning 2-1. Next up, Fiorentina hosting Hellas Verona. Thousand has Fiorentina winning 2-0, goals by Cabral Torreira. And he says Italiano's going to forget about the Coppa Italia and teach life to Tudor. And he says the Brazilian, which is Cabral, is going to obscure Vlahovic, and that Fiorentina is back in the race for a European spot. In Italian, Fiorentina Hellas 2-0, Cabral Torreira. Italiano dimentica la Coppa Italia, spiega la vita a Tudor. Il brasiliano oscura definitivamente Vlahovic, riparte la corsa all'Europa. I agree Fiorentina is going to win. I think they're actually going to use that Juve game as good motivation. But where I'm going to disagree is Hellas not scoring. Verona just have a real high flying attack. These are actually two teams that like to play Palleggio ball possession. This would actually be a really fun game to watch. So I'm going to go Fiorentina 3-2. I'm going to go Cabral, Icone, Bonaventura, and I'll give a goal to Simeone, who's back. We had scored a bunch of goals recently. Last one, biggest game of the weekend. Huge, huge match. Napoli hosting Milan. And he says Tomori is going to save a penalty because Maignan's going to get a red card. He says Pioli and Spalletti decide not to hurt each other. He says a losing mentality is going to hurt both teams. And he says Simone Inzaghi is going to run away with the money and laugh with the mediocrity. Man, what a pretty... The Tomori saves a penalty. Well played, Thousand. This is a really, really great game. Oof. Man, if Napoli can win this game, I might have to really peg them as the favorite the rest of the way. But I do believe in Milan. I kind of agree with Thousand that this is going to be a draw and kind of leave it both teams kind of in the race, kind of where they are. Have good defenses. I'm going to agree with 0-0, but I won't predict that Maignan gets a red card and Tomori gets, and Tomori saves the penalty. Great job, Thousand. As always, we really appreciate your help. So I wanted to talk briefly about one transfer story, just because I think it really exemplifies a lot of what's changing in football. So there was a report this week that Kessié is moving closer and closer to joining Barcelona on a Bosman. And interestingly, the report, and this was from Gianluca, so, you know, I feel pretty comfortable about it, that the salary really wasn't that different than what Milan was offering. And if you remember, Donnarumma, according to reports, then ended up really not getting that much more from PSG than what Milan were offering. So to me, it would be very significant if Kessié goes to Barcelona for a couple of reasons. Because A, if the salary is pretty similar to what Milan offered, my question is, was Milan offering a lot of it as a bonus? But more importantly, how much is the agent commission here? Because I'm sure for Donnarumma to PSG, that was a huge thing. And to me, what's interesting, and Milan has shown us that they can't survive losing a great player like Donnarumma, and I think Donnarumma is more impactful to Milan than Kessié was for them by bringing in Maignan. So you can't survive losing these players for nothing. And Milan have been kind of preparing for life after Kessié. So Tonali's had a great season. They own Adli from Bordeaux. He'll come in. So Milan have kind of planned for life after Kessié, I think, pretty well. But to me, what's really ironic is Kessié would be leaving a club like Milan, who's gone out of their way to be financially sustainable, to do things a little bit different, not be a club that just spends like a pirate that's been out at sea that gets to land. Like, look at Barcelona since Messi left, like signing players left and right and then renegotiating contracts to make it work with the wages versus revenues. I mean, Barcelona couldn't be operating more differently than what Milan's trying to do. Milan's trying to say, we want salaries to be sustainable. We don't want to pay huge commissions to agents. And if you think about it, the difference between a transfer fee is much more likely to be reinvested in the system. What do I mean by that? Say Milan gets a big transfer fee for Kessié, they're more likely to go out and buy more players, spread the wealth out to more teams. When the money just goes to an agent, it just goes in his pocket. It doesn't go back into the system. So that obviously is not great long term. We've talked a lot on the pod on the Bosman market becoming like NBA free agency. And this is like, if Kessié goes, it's like he's leaving a team that's trying to really be financially sustainable to go to like the Knicks or the Lakers, just can just sign whoever because of where they are. So I find it very interesting. I think if you're a Milan fan, yeah, it's a bummer if he leaves. But then on the other hand, you know, you have someone like Theo who signed an extension and he had an even bigger market than Kessié. So look, it's nothing against Barcelona. It's more about the way they operate. But seeing a player leave Serie A in a club that's trying to be really sustainable to go to one that operates like completely differently and the way Barca does, I find it really a little bit ironic. Before we get to Giancarlo Rinaldi and Fiorentina, we're going to do a special part of the pod for patrons. If you enjoy listening to us on Friday today, we have it on Thursday. We do have an episode every Tuesday just for patrons. We answer all our patron questions on both pods. We have some excellent articles. Today, Enrico Passarella really went above and beyond with a fantastic article on the young players out on loan for the top Serie A teams. Really superb article. So there's really great content there. If you enjoy the way we cover Italian football, I think you'll really enjoy Patreon. Well, I'm very excited to introduce our next guest. It's been a long time since I chatted with Giancarlo Rinaldi. We had him a few years ago on the pod. He's fantastic. For those of you that have been following Calcio for a long time, you know Giancarlo is one of the best writers on Football Italia. He's written some great books on Calcio history as well. He's an old school Calcio fan like me. And recently, he is dipping his toe in the podcast game. And I'm very excited to chat also about his Rigore pod. And we'll get to that at the end of the interview. Today, we're going to talk about Fiorentina. We're recording this before the Juve game, but I'm more interested in kind of the context of the game and looking too at the Fiorentina's new course, because I do think there are some things to be excited there, and there's no one better to chat about that than Giancarlo. So my dear friend, it's a real pleasure to welcome you back to the podcast. Bentornato to Calcioland.
Thank you very much. It's a big introduction. I hope I can live up to it.
Oh, I'm pretty confident. I'm pretty positive you will. So as I mentioned, you know, we're recording this before the game. And, you know, I started following Calcio, I think, a little bit after you. And when I think of the Fiorentina-Juve rivalry, I obviously think of the Roberto Baggio game. That's one of my first big, big memories of Calcio. But obviously, the reason that transfer was so controversial is there had to have been some bad blood before. And you wrote a recent article on Football Italia, which as usual is really brilliant, giving the context. So take us back to the 1981-82 season and the genesis of the bad blood that Fiorentina fans have towards Juve. What happened back then?
Well, I think it probably even started before that, David, with if you think Fiorentina are really the only team in Tuscany that's got, you know, a constant presence in Serie A. So they didn't have a, they don't have a local rival really who's ever been kind of their bitter enemy. So they had to go and look for it a bit further afield. And I think you know better than I do that Juventus are one of the best supported teams in Italy, around the whole of Italy. And so I think, you know, there was a natural rivalry there anyway, because if you didn't support Fiorentina in Tuscany, there's a good chance you supported Juventus. So, you know, all these games already had something extra to them. But by 1981-82 season, Fiorentina had rebuilt quite a strong squad. You know, their last Scudetto came in 1969. I always say they stopped winning Scudetti the year that I was born. And so after that, they built up a team. The previous season finished fifth. They looked strong already. And then they added in some good players to that. You remember Pietro Vercovud, the Tsar, the big defender, and Ciccio Graziani, Francesco Graziani, a World Cup winner to come with Italy. So, you know, they bolstered that squad. Daniele Massaro, Milan fans might remember San Massaro, who saved them many times through the 80s. And they already had a great, great Argentinian player in Daniel Bertoni. So, you know, this was a strong squad side, Giancarlo Di Sisti, my namesake, in charge. And they really thought they had a team there worthy of the Scudetto. They led the league. They were winter champions. And this was all done for a large part without their most famous player, their most iconic player, Giancarlo Antonioni, who was seriously injured in November in one of the most scary incidents Fiorentina fans ever had, where he was hit by goalkeeper, struck by goalkeeper Silvano Martina of Genoa, and lay on the pitch. You know, people feared he was going to die on the pitch that day. So he was out of the squad, but nonetheless, the strength of the side was such that they led the league all the way until the final day of the season. And who is neck and neck with them on the final day by Juventus? Now, Juve were travelling. They had a game with Catanzaro, and who were already safe. And Fiorentina travelled to Cagliari, who still had to fight for their survival. At half-time, the two sides went in at 0-0. So it looked, for all the world, like there's going to be a playoff here. We're going to have, in Italy, of course, goal difference doesn't decide it. If you're level on points, then we'll go to the spareggio. And it looked for all the world as if that was the way it was heading. But about 15 minutes into the second half, Fiorentina struck a blow, which they thought was going to give them potentially the Scudetto on the day itself. Ciccio Graziani tucked the ball into the net, but then the referee intervened and the goal was disallowed. A foul on the goalkeeper. I mean, you can watch the footage yourself. It's all there now. You know, I think maybe in Italy it would be given. In Scotland, certainly, it wouldn't have been given. You know, you're allowed a much more physical approach. But whatever, the game stayed 0-0. A few minutes later, in Catanzaro, Juve get a penalty. Now, I don't think there's much debate about that penalty. The guy cleared the ball off the line with, looks pretty clear with his hand. So Juve go 1-0 up. Fiorentina, try as they might, can't get the win, and the recriminations begin, really, because earlier in the game, if you go back in the Juventus game, there looked to be a fairly clear penalty for Catanzaro, a man sort of poleaxed in the Borghi, I think, their striker, trying to get to the ball, brought down by an arm with brio, but referee waves play on. So you can imagine that happened now, we'd have pictures all over social media, every angle would be examined. And even at the time, you know, you see Bertoni coming out post-match with the interview saying, you know, I never touched the player, I didn't do anything. And this was the famous season where Fiorentina fans coined the phrase, meglio secondi che ladri, better to be second than to be thieves. So, you know, that gives you a flavour of, you know, still 40 years ago, fans will will cast that up in Florence, they'll remember that. And that really, you know, as you say, you know, it was maybe simmering away in the background, but this turned up the heat on that rivalry, and obviously flared up again when Baggio made the transfer, yeah, 10 years later or so.
Wow, great history lesson. And look, if you like this kind of stuff, Giancarlo has two excellent books that go deep on this stuff. So I'm not going to belinger too much on Vlahovic, because there are some cool things to talk about Fiorentina. I want to be the focus of that, but I'd be remiss not to ask you this, especially because you're familiar with the history. And look, you know, we talked about Baggio, we also had Chiesa recently, but this Vlahovic one, you know, was really interesting, because on one hand, you know, we kept hearing of Juve's financial difficulties and Comiso trying to sell him abroad. I think, you know, he really tried to do everything he could to avoid him going to Juve. But I want to ask you this, as someone who's seen this happen before, was there a specific point where you felt that it was pretty much inevitable that Vlahovic was going to go to Juve?
There was, but it was literally only a few days before the transfer happened. As you say, it looked like Fiorentina would do everything they could to sell him elsewhere, and it did. I was skeptical when Fiorentina sort of said, you know, well, show us the money. I have to admit, I was skeptical that Juventus were in a position to do that, but with some skillful shuffling and a little help from their friends at Tottenham Hotspur, they were able to come up with the money. And at that point, you know, once the financial package was there, I think everyone at Fiorentina knew that was, you know, that was going to be it. The player clearly was keen on going to Juve, you know, Champions League football, all of that. And you know, once the money was in place, there wasn't really a lot that Fiorentina could do. And it is a little bit of history repeating, I suppose, because, you know, it's all well and good, but if a player wants to go to a club that you don't want them to go to, there isn't much you can do if the club that's courting them can meet the financial requirements. And it was a good price for, I mean, an outstanding player, no doubt, but you know, still top dollar, I would say, in Italian terms, certainly for a player of you know, relatively inexperienced. So, but I only really fully accepted it or came to terms with it a handful of days before it happened, and it happened very quickly. And annoyingly for Fiorentina, probably it happened very late in the January transfer window. But they've reacted pretty well, I would say, and you know, tried to bounce back and spend some of the money from that transfer to fill the gap that he's left.
Absolutely, yeah. So let's switch gears. I'm going to ask you at the end how you feel about Comiso after the transfer, but I want to focus on Fiorentina's new cycle. So let's start here. You're a great writer. If you look at Fiorentina's season under Italiano so far, if you had to choose one word to describe this season, what would it be and why?
I was going to say inconsistent, but I think I'll say entertaining. And the reason for that has been, it's been a long time where I think, well, the catchphrase of a lot of fans, but particularly Fiorentina fans, is mai una gioia, never any joy. And we'd gone through a long spell, Fiorentina, of really being quite difficult to watch, not being very entertaining, being quite dull, defensive, you know, not a team that if you were a neutral, you wouldn't say, you know, you wouldn't recommend to a friend, get the Fiorentina game on, because it was like watching paint dry on a fresco in the Uffizi. But now I think, you know, they definitely under Italiano, they're a much better team to watch. You know, they play an attacking brand of football. It's meant that, you know, they've hardly had a draw. This, I think, maybe three draws so far this season in Serie A. So you know when you tune in for Fiorentina, you're probably going to get quite an exciting game, and they have, you know, obviously with Vlahovic, they had a player who could decide a game by himself. But even since he's left, I think they've shown that they're capable of going out and trying to impose their play on others, which was not something that, you know, previous regimes really did. They've got a template of how they want to play. They try to play it. They're not always successful in playing it, and they do leave big gaps at the back sometimes. But, you know, they're a team, as I say. If you were saying to someone, you know, what sides should you watch in Serie A, if you're not, you know, you're just coming to the Italian game and you want to watch a good game of football, then Fiorentina would certainly be right up there as one of the teams that you'd say, turn on the television, watch that, and you probably won't be disappointed.
Totally agree. Would you agree this is probably the most entertaining Fiorentina since Montella's first go-around at the club? It kind of reminds me a little bit about that.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. That, you know, that was a good, fun team to watch as well. Probably a little more solid at the back than this Fiorentina, to be fair. But yeah, no, it's definitely been, it's been a few years. It's felt like more watching them. And as I say, you know, you just didn't know where goals were coming from. And, you know, credit to Cesare Prandelli, who really was the guy who, although you know, his team didn't do great, he did spot that Vlahovic was a player and put faith in him. And, you know,
And now,
you know, Vincenzo Italiano was reaping the rewards of it. And now Massimiliano Allegri's reaping the rewards at Juventus.
Yeah, very well said. You know, I had forgotten that Prandelli thing about Vlahovic. Okay, so let's talk about some individual players on Fiorentina. And we're going to start at the back and work our way up. So let's start with the keeper position. I think last season, Dragowski was, you know, one of the most exciting keepers in Serie A. And I mean that both in good and positive. At times, I have to say I was a little bit surprised. He's been a little bit phased out this season and Terracciano has played more. Were you surprised that Terracciano has gotten as many starts as he has? And, you know, he's in his early 30s. Do you see him as someone that can be Fiorentina's keeper for the next 2 years or so?
I mean, yes, in answer, I was surprised. I thought Dragowski was clearly the number one and Terracciano was backup. But I think that a little bit comes down to the way, again, that Italiano wants Fiorentina to play, and he needs a goalkeeper. You know, the moves all start from the back. You play it out from the back, and there's no doubt that Dragowski's a good goalkeeper, but he's a bit more suspect playing it out with his feet, whereas Terracciano has shown himself fairly consistently to be a more solid option in that regard. I mean, Dragowski being unfortunate, they got sent off and that also put him out of the reckoning for a while as well. But it wasn't the pecking order that I envisaged at the start of the season. But, you know, I think he's deserved his place. They now call him San Pietro, St. Peter in Florence, because he has made some fine saves down the season. So as regards longer term, I don't think, I mean, in a way, I feel sorry for him, because it's just, you know, in a way, he's just not that fashionable a name. He's not a big name. He's not a foreign player. You know, he doesn't get a lot of kudos. And I know that Fiorentina are at least allegedly looking around for someone else to bring in to kind of take his place, which is a bit of a shame, because he's been a solid servant. But all he can do, I suppose, is carry on doing the good job that he's doing. And, you know, 30 is not that old for a goalkeeper. We know, you know, there's Gigi Buffon signed a contract until he's about 75 now, so, you know, people can, goalkeepers in particular, can play on a lot longer. So, you know, he may have a future, and if Italiano likes him and he fits in with his play, then, you know, I think certainly everyone in Florence hopes that the coach hangs around for a while as well. So, you know, maybe Terracciano can have a longer future.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about the defenders in front of him. So there's three that stand out to me on Fiorentina. So rank us based on how you think they've done this season. Milenkovic, who's been at Fiorentina forever, but is still really young. Martinez Quarto, I have to say, I'm a big fan of. And then Igor, who has maybe been a little bit of a revelation this season. So how do you rank the performances of these three under Italiano?
I'd say, to me, Milenkovic tops the table of those three. Just he's played the most games. He's been very consistent, very solid. He's come back to the levels that, you know, he was constantly linked with moves to England a few years ago, and it's never happened for him. But he's back to those levels again that, you know, they had this sort of chat that he could be the new Vidic for Manchester United or whatever. And whilst he's not maybe playing at that level, he's certainly playing back to something like his best. He's been rock solid, and also he scored the wonder goal that set up the semi-final with Juventus as well. So, you know, that I would say puts him a nose in front of the rest. Then I would actually put Igor, because he has been, as you alluded to, a bit of a revelation this season. Not again maybe the most fashionable player. He certainly got, I think, one of the widest chests in Serie A. I mean, he's a real unit. So I don't think too many forwards would fancy a 50-50 with Igor. And he has improved. There's been the odd slip up, but I think that's to be expected. And then, as I say, down a step, although, you know, some would argue, I would put Martinez Quarta. And that's only because I think he looked so good, and he's a beautiful player on the ball. I mean, I think he's almost too skillful to be a defender. Lovely running forward, but I don't know that he quite slots in to Italiano's defence yet. I don't think we've quite sorted out. I mean, I don't know that Fiorentina know what the best centre back combination is, but he has struggled a little bit under Italiano to show his best form. And as I say, I think that may be down to the way they play. The Fiorentina try quite high intensity press, and that leaves obviously gaps in behind and puts pressure on players to kind of make last ditch tackles. And sometimes I think still maybe Martinez Quarta can sort of rush in where others would maybe take a bit more time. But that's, you know, partly that's a team issue as well. But they're you know, if Fiorentina lucky to have three good defenders like that, Martinez Quarta's potential, I think, is pretty big. But, you know, it's finding the best. But over this season, that's the order I would put them in. Maybe not all Fiorentina fans would agree.
No, I think that's a well put. Look, I would definitely buy Martinez Quarta stock now if it's low, because that guy is really good. And good for that Milenkovic to bounce back. You know, Fiorentina did pay a lot to extend his contract. So let's work our way to the midfield and slowly to the attack. There were two of the most significant additions, not just at Fiorentina, but in Serie A. It was a tough summer in the transfer window. Was Torreira coming back, and he's on loan with option to buy, and Nicolas Gonzalez, which Fiorentina bought outright. And I think it's important to note that Fiorentina bought him and Ikone outright, not loan, option to buy. Like, they paid the money. So what do you make of Torreira so far and Nico Gonzalez this season? Which one of the two do you think has made a bigger impact?
I think, although I love Gonzalez, I think Torreira has made a bigger impact. And I see that because of the structure that he gives to the team. It's not, it's probably more, Gonzalez is a more flamboyant player, a more eye-catching player in what he does. You know, I think he's still one of the most fouled players in Serie A. He takes a man on, he dribbles, he shoots, he's exciting to watch. But I think that Fiorentina for a long time have been crying out for someone to give shape to their midfield, to give, you know, to let them control a game when, if they go ahead, to take a bit of the sting out of a game, to pick sort of easy passes, really, and just give them a structure. And I think since it might be going back to David Pizarro, really, that they haven't had somebody like that. So, you know, to get a player like that into the team just gives some sense. And other than one game when he came back from international duty and he had a bit of a stinker, he's been very consistent. And you notice when he's not in the team, you notice the lack of coherence to their tactics. So, you know, I've loved Gonzalez, and I think he's starting now to be a bit more concrete. There are some times maybe where people criticise that, you know, has he given enough goals and assists for a player that we spent that amount of money on? they, you know, I think now he's starting to deliver in terms of performance as well. I can only hope with Torreira, going back to Torreira, that there seemed to be some suggestion that Arsenal might have taken the huff because they didn't get Vlahovic, and that they might not, you know, they might not, there might be a stumbling block to Torreira signing for Fiorentina. I hope that's not the case, and they can rise above that, because certainly, as I say, in Florence, they would love to keep him, and I think he could be a key player to the structure, to the style that Fiorentina want to play.
I hope he stays for Serie A's sake. A really, really nice player. Well said there. So let's talk about the two January additions. Obviously, you've had less of a sample size of them. As I mentioned, it's really worth mentioning that Fiorentina invested in Ikoné even before Vlahovic. Maybe they knew he was going to go, but it makes sense for them to buy these young players that can either blossom or have future resale value. And then they bring in Cabral, who, along with Piontek, has kind of helped replace Vlahovic. So people are familiar with Piontek. We know he's streaky. He's off to a great start. Good for him. I'm more interested, though, in your early impressions on Ikoné and Cabral, because they are expected to be part of Fiorentina's future.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can see with Piontek that he knows Serie A. You can tell that he's played there before. He's settled in very quickly, found his feet very quickly, and that's probably not all that surprising. I think with the other two, we're going through that sort of infuriating period for a lot of Italian football fans where, you know, coaches don't seem convinced that they need a bit of time to get to grips with how the Italian league operates and coping with Serie A defenders, coping with Serie A tactics. It certainly seems that Italiano's been a bit judicious with his use of both players. You know, a lot of fans would have liked to have seen Ikoné certainly go straight in as a kind of, you know, the thought of Gonzalez on one wing and him on the other is quite an exciting one. But he's stuck more with Ricardo Sutil at the moment. Even Saponara, it's been hard to judge Ikoné on what we've seen so far because we haven't seen much. He has looked a bit like there needs some fine tuning. He looks like a player who'd be great for the counter attack. He's got speed to burn, and you know, I think that. But some of his shooting has left a lot to be desired. So, but I think they've spent a lot of money. They're going to hopefully take time to find a position for him and get him into the team more regularly. Because, as I say, it's a very exciting prospect if they can. With Cabral, what I've seen, I think, is very promising. It's a very small sample size, but just, I don't know, you get a feeling for a player from their movement, from how they slot into a team, how they work with their colleagues. It looks like he's going to score plenty of goals for Fiorentina. You know, we've had plenty of duds in the past, but it looks like he can slot in. And as I say, it's not a bad thing to have a tandem, him and Piontek, for different games. You know, I think you need different solutions in different matches. Sometimes they offer, you know, different skill sets. But I'm fairly confident that King Arthur is going to rule Florence for a wee while to come.
Hopefully. So I want to ask you about Commisso, because I have to tell you, I've had a roller coaster impression of him. I think I've been very impressed with him up until the Vlahovic sale. And look, you know, I think he had really no choice. You mentioned earlier he got a good price for Vlahovic. I would agree. I mean, it's basically the entire annual revenues of Fiorentina in one transfer fee. So, look, I think losing him for nothing would have been really, really bad. I think for a club like Milan, it's a little bit easier than Fiorentina. So I get why, you know, going to Juve, you know, I think you could make the case he did everything to avoid that, but he also was very vocal criticizing Juve. So, you know, obviously you are more emotionally invested in it. So tell me a little bit, how has your impression of Commisso changed because of Vlahovic? And that's as if it has changed at all.
I mean, like yourself, it's been a roller coaster, really, with Comiso. So for those who, you know, for those who follow Fiorentina closely, it's been a similar experience, because I think we had a definite honeymoon period when people were fed up with the Della Valle. They wanted a change, and you know, this refreshing voice that was going to speak out for Fiorentina, and you know, put them on the map in America a bit as well. You know, it seemed all sweetness and light, but over time, nobody's perfect, eh? And so, you know, I think over time we've seen that there have been occasions where maybe it would have been better to say nothing rather than to appear sort of with strong opinions across the papers. But that is Comiso, you know. That's you know, love him or loathe him, that's the way he is. He's going to speak his mind. He's going to shoot from the hip. I mean, we like to think that's an American treat. That they, you know, they'll come to Europe and be frustrated by the, especially Italy, the frustrations of Italian bureaucracy. To someone who's, you know, his catchphrase is fast, 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 or whatever. You know, you'll know nothing in Italy goes fast, fast, fast. Not building a stadium, not signing a player, you know, and I think all of these things, you know, tied up with player agents, all these issues have frustrated him, and he's not been slow in expressing it. With regards to the Vlahovic transfer, you know, I don't think, going back to what I said before, I don't think there was much he could have done. You know, some fans would like to see a chairman, a president, just hold a player to their contract if they don't want them to go, you know, and leave them sitting in the stands. It has happened before, but you know, I don't think there's much sense in that. You know, it might play well with sections of your support, but you know, all you're doing is effectively devaluing a product that you've got. You know, why? I think you're shooting yourself in the foot, really, to do that. If a player doesn't want to be there, you can get a good price. I think the reality is for almost all teams. I mean, even, you know, dare I say, Juventus might even find that in a few years' time, because I don't know if they're Vlahovic's final dream destination. So, you know, if Manchester City come calling with double the money in a few years' time, we could see the whole thing repeat itself. Could Juventus say no? I don't believe they could. I mean, they'd be in a better position than Fiorentina to refuse big money, but you know, we've seen in the past that Serie A really at the moment is largely a sailing league when the biggest guns of Europe come calling. So, you know, it hasn't really, I don't think, I know some fans, it's diminished Comiso, or it's caused them to question him, but I wouldn't really see that's my view. I think it's just the realities of football now, that you know, you develop players, they a lot of young players want to move on to somewhere, and if the money's right, then you have to, what the key will be, is what we've said already. Can they invest well for the future? Can they find the next Vlahovic or the next Chiesa in their ranks, you know, and keep developing talents for the future? I mean, obviously, I hope that they can, and I hope that, you know, the danger always with a foreign investor is that they get fed up of Italy and they walk away. You know, you do get those vibes from Comiso sometimes, but hopefully, you know, the rewards can outweigh the frustrations over time, and he'll start to build a team. You know, as I say, the signs are good under Italiano that this is a team heading in the right direction, regardless of losing Vlahovic. But I guess, you know, this two-legged cup tie will maybe tell us a bit more about just how big a loss he was.
Yeah, well, look, I'll tell you, I think Serie A needs more owners like Comiso. If you ask me, knowing everything about him, would the league benefit having more guys like him? To me, the answer is yes. I don't know if a lot of people in Italy would agree with that, because sometimes when you have the outsider saying things that are true and that aren't maybe you know, that are true, but maybe not the most pleasant to hear. It's usually not very well received. But I think overall, Serie A needs more owners like Commisso. And one thing Serie A needs more of is quality podcasts that focus not just on the top teams. So one of the reasons why I wanted to have Giancarlo on isn't just because of this Fiorentina-Juve game, to give you some more context on that, is he has a new podcast called Rigore Pod that started. I listened to it. It's really, really excellent. If you enjoyed his Scottish accent today, you're going to be in heaven there. So tell our listeners, Giancarlo, what they can expect if they tune into your new pod.
Well, it is, as you've said, a sort of a slightly irreverent look at Serie A, not taking it too seriously. Not, you know, I think sometimes on social media we can get a bit dug into trenches and start sort of throwing barbs at one another. I think it's to take it, you know, if you've ever been in a bar in Italy on a Monday morning and there's the chat between the fans of the various clubs, it's great. You know, people take the mickey out of one another. They poke fun, but it never gets too heated. That's really the idea. It's myself, a lifelong Fiorentina fan, and my cousin Marco, who's a long-suffering Venezia fan. So you can imagine that's you know, we've got about 24 defeats between us this season so far in Serie A. So we're often quite miserable on a Sunday night when we record it, but we try to cover that up as best we can. And look at issue is a sort of sideways look, I suppose, at Serie A and take a bit of the underdog's view, if you like. You know, all the dodgy penalties that help the big teams, all the decisions that go in favour of the big guns. We'll be flagging those up and moaning about them at great length for the weeks to come. So yeah, if anybody'd like to get more of, as you say, Italian football with a Scottish accent, then please check us out. Rigore, just for a bit of history, since I'm so old that's all I can talk about now. I ran a fanzine on Italian football back in the 1990s, which was called Rigore. And if you think about it, you know, calling it Rigore penalty,
pretty fitting.
Well, you couldn't really have had a better title for something about Italian football, because we give so many of them. So that was, as I say, fanzines were what people used to do before the internet was invented, and it was sold around the UK and around the world, really, for, you know, we did about 25, 30 issues of that, just tales of Italian football. So when we were coming to do the podcast, we thought, you know, what title can we give it? We knocked a few back and forward, and then we went back to the tried and tested, really, because still there's still plenty of Rigori that are given in Italy. So I don't think it'll ever go out of fashion. So if anyone fancies a listen, check it out. It's on all the usual places you can get your podcasts, and Rigori, as I say, is the title that we went for.
Awesome. Well, not only check out the pod, the articles Giancarlo writes on Football Italia are fantastic. He's been going at it for a long time, and the quality is always excellent. So check out the pod. Giancarlo, thank you so much for doing the pod. I promise we won't take such a long break from having you on. I always appreciate your perspective, and all the best with Rigore Pod.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure.